Poetry on the Radio, poetry in and around the ACT. Today, verse and reverse. We talk with Adrian Caesar about his poetry, past and present, plus the Rhyming Bugle, ACT Region poetry news and events. I'm Kimberly K. Williams. ArtSound holds an archive of many hundreds of poetry recordings dating back as far as 1975. Poetry on the Radio will present some of them during this, its 40th anniversary year. Today, in the second of our verse and reverse episodes, Adrian Caesar listens back to his earlier verse and reflects upon it. Adrian Caesar is a prize-winning poet, novelist, and literary critic. He was born in England and migrated to Australia in 1982. His writing often explores such themes as the sense of place and home, injustice, and loss. We'll listen to some of Adrian Caesar's poetry from the late 1990s, but first, here are a couple of pieces from his sequence Totem, recorded here at the ArtSound Studios. As is typical of his work, it evokes what he calls, quote, strange senses of spirit, end quote, even among images of depressing industrial decay.
Totem. Amid the merry junk and bric-a-brac in the tourist village gift shop, a chart purports to show by birth date my totem creature. I'm with my wife, daughter, grandgirls. We're having fun. They are delighted, not vindictive, as they cry, "You're a goose." Silly needs no saying. I join in laughter, see the round-holed body, the two short legs, long craning neck, sharp-featured beak, the ungainly waddle, all my clumsiness. But then I remembered wild migrations. With sure compass and deliberation, in strict formation, the pink-foot geese, every year, their elegant resolve in flight. And the second one is set near where my mum and dad live in England, in St. Helens, an industrial town, and where the pink-foot geese land every year. In the abyss of days following my father's death, on cool mornings I ran through the lanes and fields beside the East Lancashire Road, that depression gift to job creation in the 1930s. Now a never quiet four lanes of heavy traffic thundering between Liverpool and Manchester. In this strange space where agriculture abuts the hectic scramble of desperate commerce, the roar of bewildered decadence, the dying whine of post-industrial decay, I heard from behind a hedgerow a shrieking clatter. I stopped to peer and saw a flock of pink-foot geese resting and feeding in the field. A sight of wonder, their honking psalm, a comic hymn rising above the spew of diesel, the tumbril din of vehicles. This raucous goose choir provided a magical balm, resounding of all humanity has not yet destroyed. The abiding promise of spirit's flight, uncanny beatitude.
Manchester-born Adrian Caesar studied at Reading University with a thesis on how mid-century British poets responded to social and political upheaval. He held appointments at various Australian universities, including the ANU and the University of New South Wales at Canberra, ADFA. His nonfiction novel, The White, Last Days in the Antarctic Journeys of Scott and Mawson, 1911 to 1913, was named ACT Book of the Year in 2000. His several books of verse include High Wire, 2005, which was shortlisted for the 2007 Judith Wright Prize. Let's listen to Adrian Caesar reading two poems 25 years ago at an event marking Australia Day in 1998. Some 16 years after he came to Australia. The first is about soccer and its poetry.
Action photo. Composed, a lovely poise and balance. For a moment, he is all swerve. Footing the proletarian two-step, he accelerates towards goal. and in perfect self-absorption knows anything is possible. He has become all metaphor, sporting his delight in play, whatever the cost of the passion game. A loss is a loss is a loss is a loss. But there is always another Saturday, when nightmare can turn to dream, and with the brisk cut inside, he delivers the perfectly weighted through ball, or times the finish to perfection. And so, for a moment, beyond himself, aspires to poetry. The second poem is, I suppose, about the business of emigration and moving between two countries and going backwards and forwards. I like poems that occur because as you're actually doing something physical, you realise that what you're doing is in itself a kind of metaphor. And that's how this poem came into being. It's called Luggage Handling. A room has no nation. It could be anywhere the night before leaving, either here or there. The open suitcase on the bed, mum and dad trying to help, fussing as to how to keep their fragile gifts, this cup, that plate, intact, by wrapping them in socks and jocks. Then my emigrant despair, how all my life will not fit in, no matter what I do. I'm forever bouncing on the lid, risking smash and spill. And when I lug it to the scales, my baggage is always in excess.
Adrian, I would love to know your first initial reactions to hearing yourself.
Well, a little bit of amazement, really. Being taken back all that time and wondering why, particularly why I chose to begin a reading with the poem about soccer, but it was Australia Day, and perhaps it was a sporting thing. I don't know. But it is interesting because that was the last thing I was expecting to hear. So there's an element of surprise, yes.
Do you recognise yourself?
Yeah, I recognise a younger self. And in that second poem that we listened to, you know, there was a time when I was writing a lot of poems about that movement between England and Australia and how that felt and what it meant and the way that being in Australia gave me a perspective on my English past that perhaps was sharper for being away. Because you're not embroiled in it, you get a bit of distance and perspective. And of course, I came to Australia in the middle of Margaret Thatcher's horrible regime, as it were. And coming to Australia at that time, I found it was like moving from the dark into the light. Things had been depressed in England for quite a long time. Arriving in South Australia, not only was the climate and the light astonishing, the sense of space, the sense of energy, the sense of hope. So it made a huge contrast, which was good to explore. I'd live in Adelaide and in Armidale in New England, come to Canberra in 1988. I don't think I would have dared to write about Australia much before that, in a way. I did go on to write a lot of poems about suburbia and living in Australia. It took me a while to feel confident that I understood quite quickly that I was not in a place that was like England. I understood that I was in a culture all of its own and I needed to try and understand it.
One of the things I noticed in the second poem was also that your family appeared. And that is something that is in your most recent book of poetry, this cathedral grief.
Yeah, I think that a lot of my work is responding autobiographically. I would identify a couple of strands in my work. One strand that's kind of social, political, and another strand that's personal and, yeah, autobiographical, I suppose. But, yeah, in the particular circumstances of the last 10 years, in which I lost my sister and then my mum and dad, a lot of my poems have been kind of working through issues to do with those losses, I guess.
As Adrian Caesar mentioned, he was confronted by key losses in his life, his parents, and his sister to pancreatic cancer.
Loss of place, feeling a sense of alienation in one's homeland, and then personal loss, which is, yes, has been difficult. And poetry seemed a way of trying to come to terms with these feelings, and really grief surprised me in a way. I've been very much, I suppose, a fairly adamant atheist. I had been interested in materialist politics, and I found little consolation in the contemplation of politics. And so it set me off on a different kind of path, really.
I asked Adrian to read a poem from This Cathedral Grief, which he published with the Recent Work Press in 2020.
The book is in two parts. Part one is Ruins of Faith, and part two, Crafting Consolation. So I thought I might read from the second part of a poem called Bubbly, which is about my sister. And I'm very fond of the poem because it reminds me so much of her, and so bubbly. How you loved all things that sparkle, fairy lights, jewellery and champagne, mirror of your brilliance pitched against the dour values of our inheritance, a world shaped by depression and two wars. Duty, work, endurance was the creed, pleasure rationed and contained, unseemly behaviour was anathema, button up, an answer to more than cold. No wonder you were moody like me. Still, in company you could effervesce and light a room with radiant wit. My word, your sister's a lively girl, my friend the poet said in admiration of brisk scintillations over dinner. How quick you were with the zest of irony. How often you delighted to make fun of me, my plodding tongue. No surprise, another favourite was lemon in fizzing tonic with dry gin, the last drink I made for you, that day in the summer courtyard, when all you wanted was to be normal and enjoy the sun and friends and the geraniums you'd planted and the ceramic lizard crawling the walls, a Mediterranean feel, you said. And we spoke of your PhD lately acquired and papers given, and nobody mentioned the book you'd hoped to write, knowing now it would not be done, yet unaware how soon you'd up and be gone. Outside our front door, we've planted an azalea called Pink Bubbles, as if in all our goings and returns, to raise a toast in celebration of your life's sweet fizz, though in our remembering, we view the glass abandoned at party's end, and grit our teeth to bear grief's flat, astringent drops.
This poem has just some incredible phrasing, the plodding tongue. I mean, that's an enviable phrase. And then the grief's flat, astringent drops. The whole title is This Cathedral Grief. Could you explain that a little?
Oh, yeah, I pinched the title. Yes, my friend Marion Halligan, in one of her novels, has a sentence that her grief is a great cathedral. Mm-hmm. And her book, The Fog Garden, is a meditation on losing her husband. I just thought it was a wonderful idea. And there was also the kind of coincidence that my sister's PhD that I mentioned, she came to this quite late. And she just finished it and had her viva about 3 weeks before she was diagnosed. And her graduation was in Ely Cathedral. And her supervisor arranged for me to be part of the academic procession for her graduation. And so the cathedral became, and this cathedral grief, and the poem about the graduation in the book seemed to me to relate to all that. And, sadly, Karen died only a matter of weeks. I think it was 3 weeks maybe after the graduation. So, this cathedral grief.
In the afterword of the book, it says, the act of faith required to write a poem remains for me a conflicted experience. As we're talking about these things, we're talking about grief, we're talking about the relationship between you and your sister, and then how that's expressed in poem. I mean, that itself, that kind of expression is an act of faith.
Yes.
And it says, similarly, secure religious conviction eludes me, as you mentioned already. Doubt is ever present. The poems, then, are provisional statements. They are not written in support of illustration of any single position or belief. So I wondered if you could extrapolate that a little bit, just in light of what we've been talking about. And even if you're thinking all the way back to the poems from the 1990s, how things change, shift, move forward.
Yeah, I think to begin with, it's worth perhaps saying that in the 1990s, and you know, I had a very kind of secure sense or a conviction that writing poems was a good thing to do. I had faith in the poem, as it were. And I suppose, in a way, I had faith in literature as something, or art indeed, that could change society, change people. I think as I got older, I found it more difficult to hang on to that faith, even though I kept writing. I certainly, I think, lost faith in the notion that poetry could make any political difference at all. Though I think that it could change people, individual lives.
Yes.
I think it can impact, or at least console individual lives.
Absolutely.
If not change them. But that is a slight shift in emphasis. And so, and in these specific poems, the elegies for my sister, that sense of the inadequacy of the medium or my manipulation of it to do justice to my sister was ever present. And whether the writing would speak to other people as well, the doubt of whether I was getting enough distance so that the poems would sit out there and speak to other people.
Sure.
And not seem too personal. So there's a lot of doubt and faith going on about writing the poems. And then, of course, there's a lot more, you know, I went back and started reading quite a lot of contemporary or modern theology, which interested me a lot. Because I had tried to believe when I was a teenager and couldn't, and still can't believe in conventional Christian doctrine. But I found some approaches to contemporary theology much more congenial, and I was quite interested in those. But again, as it says, I failed to be convinced.
Right.
If you see what I mean.
I know, I do. So as you're speaking, I wonder if it's that doubt and faith are inseparable. I don't know why I think of faith, but they're palling around together.
Yes, they are palling around together. And I mean, I think the other thing that I maybe like to say is that the odd experience of grief made me feel that there is something spiritual in the universe, in the world. I don't have the language to describe it much beyond that, but I had a very strong, which surprised me, because I expected to be bitter and angry. And in fact, I didn't feel bitter, but I had an odd sense of spiritual consolation.
I can understand or appreciate better the metaphor of the title,
Cathedral
Grief, because this, you know, cathedral, and it's usually as a building is quite enormous. And so it's sort of affording a space of contemplation, but also then room for doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. And the cathedral has all kinds of moods, and you know, it can be quite large and empty, as well as sometimes filled with light from the rose window or filled with music.
Yeah.
Graduation at Ely. I am exploring this cathedral grief, where you stood robed in triumph, blue and saffron, to receive the degree which meant so much. It's my Olympic goal, you said, despite your diagnosis, the shadow of impending death, now imminent, darkening on you. And always in the shafts of stony light, I'll see you turn and smile at me in the front row at last for once, your face a vision of delight, as in our childhood conspiracy, our club of two, you handing out the merit badges I didn't deserve. The organ boomed. I hoped a better tune might wreathe the march towards the great octagonal lantern where Christ in glory looks down on ours. But still the notes were grand enough to introduce the moment of your citation. Doffed caps, the doctoral scroll in hand, the all too brief applause. Then it was done, and we sat on through the naming of 100 bachelor graduands, the exhaustion of acclaim by rote, your happy moment dulled by repetition. I wished it all could be for you alone, your last hurrah echoing on and on, instead of some grim parable about pride. The vaulted ceiling and flying buttresses designed to remind us who and what we are, our smallness in that cavernous nave, all of us dying and destined for dust. Now, as I write these wandering lines, I conjure the faithful builders, generations of master masons whose lives became this stone ship of the fens. How little my making seems against their vast and lasting vessel. Yet it refuses me passage back to the reality of you, that beatific smile, our lovely friendship. Instead, I inhabit this hollowed space, the congregation of friends departed, your ghostly presence hovering here and not here, there and not there, against the blank of loss. And yet, such is the place of prayer, becoming this poor hymn and doubtful liturgy, blocks of my hope and my despair, which do not tower, but still aspire to sing the possibility of spirit, your lasting shine.
Adrian Caesar, reading from his 2020 book from Recent Work Press, This Cathedral Grief. Today on Poetry on the Radio, the second of our verse and reverse features, we've heard from Adrian Caesar speaking about his poetry, present and past. Let's go back to the Art Sound archives. They hold many gems, and the 1998 Australia Day reading by Adrian Caesar certainly exemplifies that.
When I was a little boy, my mom used to sit me on the dining room table and sing to me songs that she'd learnt when she was a girl from her Irish father. So this is a poem that celebrates that. And it's simply called Songs, and it's for my mum. Before school began my long unlearning, after dinner, which was lunch up north, my mum would hold me on the table and sing about a cat whose tail caught fire and burnt down the house. Ding dong derry-o, let's all be merry-o, little boy, pretty boy, under the broom. Or there was one concerning the return of some errant prodigal, met by neighbours, kissing the Collins all. He was embraced by Sister Kate, and even the girl he used to swing down by the garden gate declared him welcome as the flowers in May to dear old Donegal. Those strange words sank into me, forming strange flotsam in seas of loss, which now I daily cruise, as if in that divided stream I first became enmeshed in gentle nets of art, both trawler and traveller, knowing that as a voyage is long, so the greeting's great when the ship comes in. My first day at school, I was chastised for singing. I wanted to set the world on fire. Ever since I've been writing my journey, hoping for others to be inflamed by these burning tales, trying to bring the house down. Always I craved a large reception, my ear tuned to the rhythm of the swing, that lost girl waving by the garden's gate. And just one more. And again, it continues the kinds of themes that several poems that I've read are about. And it's about moving between countries. It's also a poem which in a way is about masculinity. I went to school on Merseyside, and I very well remember the cry of my teammates in the soccer team who used to shout at me, "Stop reading that puff poetry and come play footy, Julie." Julie, of course, being an abbreviation of Julius. So this poem refers to that and its place in my development, I suppose. The poem's called The Gift. Visiting parents from another world, I'm asked to sort books that were mine as a child. The Treasure Island I read when I was six. Football annuals, observers' volumes of keenly ogled planes and ships. They remind me how, in my mother's words, I was a real little boy, or tried so hard to be, climbing trees with the Marshall's gang. It was all bloody noses and scratched knees. I scored my first league goal at eight. Somehow sport, adventure, travel became me. "Stop reading that puff de poetry and come play footy," was the cry at school. And when unemployment beckoned, I made myself a romantic migrant, business class by jumbo jet. But now the 36-hour flight is just another boozy haul. Approaching 40, my last game beckons, and island treasure is buried beyond reach forever. So these childhood imprints are packed nostalgia for a jumble sale, my past in carrier bags, to please some random boy who may perfect a climb through branches or dumb cloud, to risk by tree or plane those artful heights where dizzying words change people and incite.
You can read more about Adrian's work at adriancesar.com. His most recent book is a novel, A Winter Sewing. I'm Kimberly K. Williams.
The Rhyming Bugle. The University of Canberra Vice-Chancellor's International Poetry Prize is running again in 2023. Entries are now open until the 30th of June. The prize has been offered annually since 2014 and is administered by the university's Centre for Creative and Cultural Research. After a shortlist is announced, the 2023 winners will be named by November 2023. The winner will receive $15,000. The competition has a runner-up award of $5,000. The competition also invites international entries and has a $5,000 prize for those too. Organisers will publish an online anthology of 60 entered poems. For details, terms and conditions, search online for University of Canberra Vice-Chancellor's International Poetry Prize 2023. That deadline again, June 30. On Monday, March 20 at 7 p.m, That Poetry Thing at Smith's Alternative in Civic features Angama Obaidullah reading in English and Farsi to celebrate the New Year's Festival of Nowruz. Also on the program, music from guitarist and vocalist Masood Tagimola. This month's poetry reading at Manning Clark House in Forest on Thursday, March 23 at 7 p.m. will feature three poets, Kathleen Kidawai, Jen Crawford and Shehzad Hati. You can register to attend via the Facebook page of the Manning Clark House Poetry Reading Series. Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly on unceded Ngunnawal country in the studios of ArtSound FM. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with me, Peter Monahan. Special thanks to Annika Grant. Poetry on the Radio is heard each Sunday at 4:30 p.m. and again at 10:30 p.m. on Mondays. Find out more on the Poetry on the Radio page under the Programs tab at artsound.fm. The music on today's program is from Ian Carr's 1993 album, Sounds and Sweet Airs. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid.